Welcome to the debate. What happens when the most unbreakable rule in global sports, you know, collides with the phone call from the Oval Office?
That is the million-dollar question right now.
Right. Because in international football, there is this foundational unyielding principle, which is that the referee decides. It's really the bedrock of the game's legal system, and it's designed to ensure absolute fairness across all competing nations.
Mm-hmm.
But at this 2026 World Cup, we're looking at a sequence of events that has just utterly shattered the illusion of a boundary between sport and state. United States striker Phalaron Balogun received a direct red card against Bosnia and Herzegovina. And by every established metric, that carries an automatic suspension.
Yeah, normally there's virtually no avenue for appeal.
Exactly. However, following a confirmed phone call from Donald Trump to FIFA President Gianni Infantino, FIFA abruptly invoked this obscure clause. It's Article 27 of its disciplinary code, and they used it to suspend that penalty, meaning Balogun is now cleared to play in tomorrow's crucial round of 16 match against Belgium.
It is unquestionably one of the most explosive and honestly heavily scrutinized moments in modern World Cup history. But the fundamental disagreement we have today comes down to how we interpret the mechanics and really the legitimacy of that specific decision.
Precisely. I'll be arguing today that this sequence of events represents a catastrophic breach of FIFA's institutional independence. By bowing to political pressure or, you know, at the very least, creating the undeniable appearance that they have, FIFA has obliterated legal certainty.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, they've compromised the fundamental integrity of this entire tournament.
Well, and I will be arguing that the use of Article 27 is in fact a legally valid, optically messy mechanism. It was utilized to correct a disproportionately harsh sporting penalty.
Right, but at what cost?
We just cannot allow a politician's public boasting to automatically invalidate what is at its core a legally sound disciplinary correction.
Okay, so if we look at this from a purely institutional and legal level, international football relies on a very specific ecosystem of rules to function. The absolute anchor of that ecosystem is the finality of the official's decision on the pitch. Normally, the equation is incredibly simple.
Direct red equals a one-match ban.
Exactly. A direct red card equals an automatic suspension for the following match. That rigidity is a feature, not a bug, because it exists to guarantee equal treatment. It ensures that the smallest footballing nation receives the exact same disciplinary framework as the host nation.
Right.
But what we've seen here is FIFA bypassing those automatic rules directly after a head of state intervenes. By doing so, they haven't just cleared one player to play, they have destroyed the legal certainty for every single team in this tournament. If the rules can be paused just because a president picks up the phone, the objective standard of the rules no longer exists.
I hear that, but we have to look at the sporting reality here, specifically from the perspective of the incident itself on the pitch. Many fans, analysts, and even former referees viewed the original red card against Balogun as just far too severe.
It was certainly controversial.
It was a clear overreach by the match official, and it fundamentally altered the trajectory of the U.S. team in a knockout scenario. U.S. coach Mauricio Pochettino rightly refuses to engage with the political rumors surrounding this, stating simply that this decision is a restoration of justice for his player.
Well, he would say that, wouldn't he?
Sure, but furthermore, before we delve into the philosophy of rules, we really need to be incredibly precise about the legal mechanism at play here. Legally, the red card was not withdrawn.
Wait, really?
Yeah. It wasn't magically erased from the record books as if the referee's decision never happened. It remains registered administratively. What FIFA has done is place the execution of the suspension on a probationary construct. It's a highly nuanced but vital distinction, because they utilized an existing legal tool to correct an on-field injustice.
Okay, before we go further into whether this was an injustice, I want to pause on that mechanism because I am genuinely confused by the application here. Explain that to me like I'm entirely new to sports law.
Sure.
What exactly does a probationary construct mean in practice for Balogun if he steps onto the pitch tomorrow against Belgium? Like, does the red card still exist? And if so, how is he allowed to play?
That is a crucial question because the misunderstanding of this mechanism is driving a lot of the global outrage right now. In administrative terms, the red card is still attached to Balogun's tournament profile.
Okay.
However, the punishment, so the mandatory one-match ban, has been suspended, essentially putting him on probation. Mechanically, if he steps onto the pitch against Belgium and receives even a minor infraction, say a standard yellow card, that probationary status is instantly revoked.
Oh, wow. So they stack.
Exactly. The original suspension would then stack on top of any new penalty. It operates like a suspended sentence in a traditional legal system. It is a sword hanging over the player's head.
Right.
And that is fundamentally different from annulling the card entirely, which would imply the referee's decision was factually void. Instead, the disciplinary committee is basically saying the infraction occurred, but the mandated punishment is disproportionate to the context, so we are pausing the punishment.
Okay, so the suspension is paused, not erased. But that forces us to interrogate the existence and application of the tool used to pause it, which is Article 27.
Right.
When a rulebook clearly states that a direct red card mandates a suspension, how can a committee just decide the punishment is disproportionate and pause it?
I come at it from a different way. We have to ask ourselves why Article 27 exists in the disciplinary code in the first place. Laws and codes of conduct in sports aren't written in a vacuum, right?
True.
They account for human error and systemic failure. Article 27 was deliberately designed as a safety valve. It is there precisely to prevent the blind adherence to automatic rules when extraordinary circumstances demand flexibility.
But is this an extraordinary circumstance?
Well, sometimes a referee makes a catastrophic error in real time, and for whatever technical reason, the video assistant referee system fails to correct it on the pitch. If that sequence of errors ruins the competitive balance of a knockout stage, and the governing body possesses a built-in legal mechanism to temporarily suspend the fallout, isn't it their moral obligation to the sport to use it? The rule book shouldn't be a suicide pact for the sport's credibility.
I see why you think that, but let me give you a different perspective on how safety valves function in legal frameworks. Let's look at this through the lens of a broader judicial system to understand the mechanics of objective standards.
Okay, go ahead.
Imagine a local judge is presiding over a case where the law dictates a mandatory minimum sentence. The reason mandatory minimums exist, for all their flaws, is to remove judicial bias and ensure uniform application of the law.
Right, to keep things standard.
Exactly. Now, the day before sentencing, that judge receives a highly publicized phone call from a powerful politician. The next day, the judge decides to bypass the mandatory minimum, citing a rarely used, highly obscure clause about exceptional circumstances to suspend the sentence.
I see where you're going with this.
In that scenario, the mechanics of the law completely break down. The law ceases to function as an objective standard because the application of the safety valve appears entirely arbitrary. It looks triggered not by the facts of the case, but by external pressure.
Yeah, optically it's terrible.
It is. The rigidity you criticize is exactly the mechanism that protects the system from claims of favoritism. If Article 27 is invoked under these specific, highly politicized circumstances, why do the automatic rules even exist?
But your analogy assumes that the application of Article 27 was inherently arbitrary simply because of the phone call. It assumes causation, where there might only be correlation.
It's a pretty strong correlation.
Maybe. But if that local judge realizes the mandatory minimum is being applied to someone who genuinely does not deserve the severity of the punishment, we applaud them for finding the legal mechanism to prevent the injustice. Yes, the timing of the application here is an absolute lightning rod.
It's visually disastrous.
It is visually disastrous, I won't argue that. But we cannot ignore the tangible outcome, which is fixing a terrible refereeing decision that would have sidelined a star player for a crucial knockout match. The sporting outcome is actually the correct one.
If this were purely a debate about refereeing errors and the philosophy of sporting justice, I might be inclined to agree that the outcome justifies the means.
Right.
But we have to look at how this decision practically impacts the pitch. You argue that this corrects a sporting injustice for the United States. But by changing the parameters of the game 24 hours before kickoff, you have instantly created a massive, tangible injustice for Belgium.
The Belgium argument is fascinating, but ultimately I contend that allowing the absolute best players to compete is the ultimate form of sporting justice. The World Cup is meant to be the pinnacle of the sport, you know?
Of course.
It's a showcase of the world's elite talent. Reinstating the United States' most dangerous, dynamic striker makes the upcoming round of 16 match a true test of skill between two top-tier nations. It ensures the game is decided by the athletes on the pitch rather than dictated by an overly harsh refereeing error from days prior.
That sounds great in theory.
But surely, as purists of the sport, we want to see Belgium test themselves against the best possible American side.
But professional football at this elite level isn't just about putting 11 talented people on a field and blowing a whistle to see who is better. The modern game is defined by meticulous, exhaustive tactical preparation.
Naturally, yes.
The mechanics of preparing for a World Cup knockout match are incredibly precise. The Belgian national team's coaching staff has spent the last 72 hours running algorithms on player heat maps, analyzing video, and building a highly specific defensive shape. And they built that shape entirely around the absence of Fuller and Balogun.
They're prepared for a different game.
Completely. Balogun is a pacey striker who constantly looks to break the defensive line and run in behind. Without him, the U.S. was fully expected to play a traditional target man, a larger striker who holds up the ball with his back to the goal. A defense prepares for those two profiles in fundamentally different ways.
That's true.
Belgium likely spent days practicing a higher defensive line to reintroduce a completely different offensive threat a mere 24 hours before kickoff invalidates days of highly specific workload. It breaks the tactical ecosystem of the match. The Belgian Federation has publicly expressed their astonishment, stating this is in direct conflict with FIFA's own rules.
Right, and they're looking into legal steps.
Exactly. Doesn't this 11th-hour disruption do significantly more damage to the mechanics of a level playing field than a harsh red card ever could?
Tactical preparation is absolutely vital. And I don't dismiss the frustration of the Belgian coaching staff, but tournament football is inherently fluid. Teams have to adjust to massive, unpredictable variables all the time.
But this wasn't an injury.
I know, but think about it. A star player can pull a hamstring during the pre-match warm-up. A sudden illness can sweep through a camp overnight. A torrential downpour can render a meticulously planned passing game entirely useless. Elite management requires the ability to adapt.
Belgium is adaptable, sure, but...
Belgium is a world-class team with a world-class tactical setup. They are more than capable of dropping their defensive blocks slightly deeper to account for Balogun's pace. I struggle to accept that Belgium's right to an uninterrupted tactical assignment supersedes the principle of correcting a wrongful suspension. The concept of a level playing field means that both teams operate under a fair and accurate application of the laws of the game. If the original red card was an unfair application, then reinstating Balogun doesn't tilt the playing field against Belgium. It actually levels it back to its natural rightful state.
That argument might hold weight if this tactical disruption was caused by an unpredictable injury or the weather, but it wasn't.
Right.
The reason this tactical disruption feels so egregious to Belgium and, well, to the rest of the watching world, is because of how it was orchestrated. We are not operating in a vacuum. The shadow of political interference is entirely overwhelming the sporting reality of this tournament.
I certainly won't deny that the political shadow is massive. It is dominating the global conversation, and rightly so.
It is more than a shadow. It is a blinding spotlight on the mechanics of global sporting governance.
Let's walk through the undeniable facts, as reported by multiple major international media outlets.
Okay, let's look at the facts.
First, Donald Trump personally called Gianni Infantino. Second, there are widespread reports that the U.S. government applied extra-legal diplomatic pressure beyond just a single phone call. Third, and perhaps most damningly for the optics of the situation, Trump publicly thanked FIFA on his Truth Social platform immediately after the decision was finalized.
Yeah, the optics are undeniable. Historically, FIFA has built a fortress around its institutional independence. This is an organization that routinely suspends entire national football federations if a local government even attempts to pass legislation affecting the sport.
Absolutely. They guard that independence fiercely.
If the domestic parliament tries to regulate how a local league operates, FIFA bans that country from global competition to protect the separation of sport and state. Yet here, a head of state calls the president directly, and suddenly the rules bend.
It's quite a contrast.
The international media isn't just whispering about this. They are uniformly using terms like unprecedented, extraordinary, and political intervention. The German DFB, a massive, influential power broker in world football, is demanding immediate explanations.
Mm-mm.
The European federations are highly sensitive to FIFA bowing to a host nation. This isn't just a grievance from Belgium anymore. This is about the global perception of institutional corruption.
That's a compelling argument. But have you considered the mechanics of domestic political utility for the American president? We really have to separate the political boasting from the actual administrative process of the disciplinary committee.
How can you separate them when they happen on the exact same day?
Well, look at how Trump's domestic political strategy relies heavily on claiming credit for victories. He portrays himself to his base as the ultimate dealmaker, the strong man who is, you know, standing up for America on the global stage.
I won't argue with that.
Right, so consider the timeline from a different angle. What if FIFA's internal disciplinary committee was already reviewing the referee's match report? What if they were already debating the invocation of Article 27 because the referee himself admitted a potential error in his post-match documentation?
That's a lot of what-ifs.
It is. But if the president catches wind of this internal bureaucratic review, making a phone call and then rushing to social media to claim he orchestrated the whole maneuver is a classic, highly effective political maneuver. It does not necessarily prove that FIFA's disciplinary committee capitulated to his demands. Those two tracks, a domestic political win for the president and an unwanted, highly publicized international interference for FIFA, can exist simultaneously without one definitively proving the causality of the other.
I'm not convinced by that line of reasoning because for an organization like FIFA, the appearance of political bias is just as institutionally fatal as actual documented bias.
That's fair. The appearance alone is incredibly damaging.
You asked me earlier to consider the moral obligation to correct a sporting injustice, but what about the moral obligation to maintain trust in the governing body? When the president of the host nation publicly takes credit for altering a disciplinary ruling in favor of his own team, and FIFA remains utterly silent on the exact timeline and criteria used, they are implicitly validating the narrative of capitulation.
Yeah, the silence is definitely a problem.
Whether they actually capitulated in the boardroom, or whether they just happened to reach the same conclusion independently through a valid administrative process, is almost irrelevant to the global audience at this point. The damage is done. The credibility of any future decision is fundamentally compromised.
I understand why people feel that way.
Because how can any competing nation trust the disciplinary committee going forward, knowing that the mechanics of justice might be swayed if a sufficiently powerful politician decides to dial up the FIFA president?
You're touching on the real administrative crisis here, which is the agonizingly sensitive position of Gianni Infantino and the disciplinary committee. Even if we assume the decision to use Article 27 was legally flawed, meticulously documented, and initiated days before any political pressure began.
Which is a big leap of faith.
It is. But even if we assume that, the fundamental question the Globe is asking remains. Why was Article 27 applied right now, in this specific instance? The disciplinary code is full of red cards that players and managers think are unfair. Yet we almost never see this mechanism deployed.
Exactly.
Parent communication has allowed the political narrative to completely consume and override the sporting narrative.
Whether this was a masterstroke of sporting justice or an act of political corruption, the one thing neither of us can deny is the fallout. The current state of affairs, marked by FIFA's silence, is entirely unsustainable. The timing and the optics have inflicted massive, perhaps irreparable, institutional damage on FIFA's credibility.
It's certainly a crisis.
When you defend the rigid principle that the referee decides for decades, and then suddenly abandon it when the most powerful man in the host country gets involved, the process matters just as much as the outcome.
I maintain my position that a legally defensible correction of a sporting penalty shouldn't be discarded simply because of political grandstanding. We cannot let a social media post veto a legitimate disciplinary review, you know?
Even if it looks terrible.
Right, because banning a player just to avoid the appearance of political collusion sacrifices the tournament's competitive integrity on the altar of public relations. However, I agree that the fallout demands an immediate institutional repair mechanism. The global reaction shows that FIFA cannot simply ride this out in silence. They must provide full, unredacted public disclosure of their legal reasoning and the precise timeline of events.
Exactly. We need to see the exact procedure and the documentation used by the officials. The only way to prove your theory, that the administrative process was entirely separate from the political pressure is to publish the timeline.
Ri's post-match report acknowledging an error, or if it was initiated from the top down after the phone call. That transparency is the only thing that can pierce this cloud of suspicion.
It's the bare minimum they owe the fans and the other teams.
Beyond the immediate crisis of this specific match, there is also a clear necessity for an independent evaluation after the 2026 World Cup concludes. We need an objective post-mortem of how this was handled, conducted by a body completely insulated from FIFA executives.
That would be essential.
And critically, this evaluation must lead to a codified definition of Article 27. If it is going to remain in the rulebook as a safety valve, the parameters for an extraordinary circumstance must be explicitly defined to prevent future accusations of arbitrary application. Furthermore, there must be strictly enforced codes of contact regarding contact between political leaders and sports administrators during these global events.
We began this discussion by looking at the foundational rules of international sports, right? The blind trust placed in the mechanics of the game and the finality of the official's decision. What the Balogun controversy has revealed is just how fragile that legal ecosystem truly is when global politics and international sport collide.
It really has.
The immense complexity of this situation leaves us without easy answers. Did FIFA courageously utilize a rare legal mechanism to ensure the best players decide the World Cup on the pitch? Or did they capitulate to geopolitical pressure, forever fracturing the legal certainty and objective standards of the sport?
Only time and hopefully some transparency will tell.
That is the question that will hang over every remaining match of this tournament, and we leave it to you to decide which perspective carries more weight. Thank you for joining us on the debate.